Hello and welcome to this, the 10th Arsenal Beat special. We've covered everything from the WSL to William Saliba, cryptocurrency to Captain Vieira. This time round, we'll be focusing on Gabriel Jesus, looking back at his career today and how his move to Arsenal could impact on Mikel Arteta's side. I'm Mark Manbrines from PA Media, and joining me to talk all things Jesus is the voice of South American football, Tim Vickery, Times football reporter, Paul Hurst, Jack Gorn, Northern football reporter at the Daily Mail, Sam Dean, football writer at the Daily Telegraph, and The Athletic's Art de Roche. Tim begins our story back in Brazil, where he was one of the people tracking the emerging talent of one Gabriel Jesus.
And there's Jesus! Oh, goodness me! Two goals in 60 seconds for Gabriel Jesus. But these Arsenal fans were excited about him before. Can't imagine how much they're looking forward to the Premier League season starting next weekend now.
Tim, there's probably no one more fitting to have on to talk about this than yourself. In terms of Gabriel Jesus, what was his breakthrough? What's his history in Brazilian football?
He came up the ranks with Palmeiras. Now, Palmeiras are at the moment the double winners of South America's Champions League, the Copa Libertadores. They're an absolute giant. But they had some bad times. They had a few relegations. And he's a key part of the club coming back after their last relegation, restructuring financially. And he made him a lot of money when they sold him to Man City. But also refinding their feet on the field. When he kind of first really made his name at senior level, when Palmeiras won the domestic cup. The cup's taken really seriously over here. It's opposite to what's happened to cup competitions in Europe, you know, where the FA Cup has lost importance. In recent years, the Brazilian Cup has gained importance. So he helped them win the Brazilian Cup in 2015. And then 2016 is the big, it's an absolutely key year in his career, 2016. He's playing South America's Champions League, the Libertadores. If memory serves me right, I think he got sent off in a vital game when they got knocked out in the group phase, but that's part of the experience. But what happens to him in 2016? Wins the league with Palmeiras, and he's the main man. Wins the Olympic gold medal with Brazil, and gets promoted to the senior side. And Gabriel Jesus grew up poor, working class São Paulo. His father walked out on the family when he was very, very young. His mum, he's the youngest, I think, of a number of kids. And his mum brought him up on her own. She is an absolute hero. An absolute hero. I mean, I can speak about this with some authority because 26 years ago or so and more, I met poor working class Brazilian woman bringing up two kids on her own, you know. And I know how hard that's been, even with me involved. For her to do that on a cleaner salary and bring them up right is a fantastic, fantastic achievement. It really is. The possible downside to this is, and I don't mean this in a nasty way, but obviously from the way he's grown up, quite protected as the youngest in that structure, he's a little bit of a mummy's boy. And you've seen some of those aspects, I think, during his career.
If we go back to those formative years, when it was clear that he was breaking through at Palmeiras, how long did it take for people to realise he was going to be this special player, this diamond in the rough? And also, was there obvious interest from Europe? So I don't know if it was just Man City or there were other clubs that were sniffing around him.
It was so quick. It was really, really quick. You know, it's one of those players who, once he got into senior level, wow, you know. So it was a very, very quick process. I mean, in start of 2015, who? You know, 18 months later, he's Brazil's centre forward. So that was a very, very quick process. And City have brought in loads of youngsters from South America. Some of them you've never heard of because they've loaned them here and they've loaned them there. but they were already deriving the benefit of the scouting network that they put in place. So it was all very, very quick. It was a meteoric rise, but for so long, until the World Cup, he jumped through every hoop. I mentioned the relationship with his mum. So it sounds nasty if I say this, that he's a bit of a mummy's boy. I'm honestly not being nasty, but that's the reality of how he's grown up. And as I say, I think his mum is just an absolute Brazilian hero. But he didn't come back. He didn't come back from the trauma of 2018 very well. I think that there's an obvious contrast. And again, I'm not making any club points at all here. There's an obvious contrast in temperament, in personality between him and Richarlison. You know, Richarlison is nasty and is full of himself and will back himself in any circumstances. Gabriel Jesus, you just wonder if he's not quite as mentally strong. And that's been one reason that his career after 2018, and we're four years on from that now, you know, after 2018, it's been a good career, but not a great career. And you feel that there is greatness in him that can be unlocked. And maybe Arsenal are now unlocking it, although it is early days, but a very encouraging start.
You touched on he's deep-rooted with his family and things back in Brazil. So would having the likes of Gabriel Magalhães, Gabriel Martinelli and Edu and things like that help him settle at Arsenal? Do you think having almost like a...
No, I think his family come over with him. You know, he's got family close. They came over with him to Man City. And no, he seems to have adapted very well. And he gives interviews in English. And it's obviously beneficial, I think, to have people of your own nationality around. But no, I've never spoken to him, but he comes across as such a thoroughly likable young man, doesn't he? Back to the heroic role, I think, played by his mother. He just comes across as a lovely fella, and I'm sure that he hasn't had any problems socially bedding in off the field. You know, that wouldn't seem to be the case at all.
There must be the increase in the number of Arsenal shirts you see now.
No, because there are lots anyway, and it really is striking. The amount of Arsenal fans there were, but it's because the Premier League got big over here exactly at the time when, you know, the Arsene Wenger side were at their peak. Lots of them have been seduced. And I do a TV program every week with a journalist who was a correspondent in England for a while, and Arsenal's his big team. So we joke about that. I was at a game on Saturday, and a hugely famous journo behind me spent a lot of the game, and he's an Arsenal fan as well, he spent a lot of the game learning and trying to taunt me with the song that you lot have come up for Gabriel Jesus, you know. So there aren't any more Arsenal shirts as a result of Gabriel Jesus. There were plenty anyway.
Next up, we speak to two reporters who covered Jesus's stint at Manchester City in depth, as Paul and Jack discuss his development, his changing role, and ultimately his departure.
De Bruyne has fallen. 2-0, Jesus, terrific ball from De Bruyne, and Jesus couldn't miss, and City in control already.
So Gabriel Jesus arrives in Manchester, January 2017. Paul, was it met with much fanfare at the time compared to the big name signings they were bringing in around then?
There was a lot of hype around him, and there was a lot of hope as well, because City were really in a bad way at that point. I think they lost 4-0 to Everton the previous weekend, and I think they were fifth in the league, and they were really, you know, they were worlds apart from what they are now under Guardiola. Just looked really disjointed, and then, you know, this guy signed. I think it was a problem with his papers, so it was a bit of a delay, which annoyed Pep. And then I remember that debut against Tottenham. He only came on for 8 minutes. It was 2-2 draw. Only came on for 8 minutes, but he was brilliant. And I think he hit the post, had one disallowed, and set up another chance that David Silva could have scored. So he gave the place a real lift. He had a lot of energy. And I think at that point we thought that this guy's going to be challenging Sergio Aguero for the for the striker's spot for the rest of the season. And I think that was probably a bit ahead of schedule. I think Pep thought maybe give him a bit of time to bed in. But certainly that early stages of Jesus' time at Man City, he looked ready then. And he had so much enthusiasm and energy. And he pressed a lot, which is what Pep loves, obviously, wants from all his players. So, yeah, there was a real buzz around Jesus when he signed. And, you know, I think they thought at that moment they got one of the most promising strikers in the world.
Yeah, to a casual Man City fan at the time, would they have heard of Gabriel Jesus, or was it more you've got to trust what the club are doing, who they're bringing in, and what they'll do with that player?
Yeah, I don't think anyone had really heard of him before. I think it was they'd sort of signed him in the summer, and then he stayed there for in Brazil for 6 months, and then came in, and as Paul said, just sort of took the Premier League by storm. I think the important thing to note about Jesus' time at City is that he made Aguero a better player, and actually makes everyone that he plays with a better player because of his selflessness and how he works for the team. And I know Pep was sort of trying to phase Aguero out at that point, and it gave him a bit of a rocket, Jesus arriving, because he'd started really well, scored some goals, then got injured. He'd got picked ahead of Aguero in a game against Bournemouth away, I think, which we all thought at the time was like, right, this is a bit of a changing of the guard. And then he got injured, and then Aguero seemed to sort of kick on from there. And then obviously you've seen in his over his time at City, he's like sort of changed positions, played wider. But he was always picked for the biggest games, which I think tells you everything you need to know about him.
Paul, you mentioned it earlier about the Aguero thing. Was it almost harsh on him that he was never, from the outside at least, he was never able to shake that idea that he was just a backup striker to Aguero? To people that didn't watch City every week, I think that's how a lot of them would have seen him, wasn't it?
Yeah, and whenever we spoke to him in the mix zone after matches, that always came up. You know, do you think you've got the, you know, what it takes to replace Aguero? And Aguero is, you know, certainly was at that point in City's, in the eyes of City fans, he was irreplaceable. You know, he's a club legend, scored the record number of goals for Man City. So, yeah, he was always viewed in that light. You know, he was a guy who was going to take away the, you know, the sort of the sweetheart of the fans. But as Jack said, he kind of evolved a little bit over time. And because he was selfless, he would offer to play on the left wing. He would offer to play on the right wing. So Pep found a way to fit them both into the team in the end. But certainly at the start, it looked as if that was his destiny. You know, like Jack said, it looked as if Pep was trying to move Aguero out of the team. I think what it did help Aguero sort of understand or appreciate what Pep wanted from him more. He basically gave him in more ruder terms, it gave him a kick up the backside. Do you know what I mean? Aguero was not really doing much tracking, wasn't doing much pressing, so just standing in the box and sort of waiting for it on the plate. Whereas Pep wanted his striker at that point to be involved in all parts of the play, the build up and pressing as well. And Gabriel offered him that, so it made Aguero sort of kick on into an even better player.
Jack, there's a strange rhetoric in that respect, I suppose, towards the end of last season, during most last season actually, with this talk of Man City needing this number nine and playing without a nine, and then obviously going and getting Haaland in, who's arguably the best in that position. But what happened with Jesus in that position? Had he almost played himself out of that role by that selflessness and showing that he could adapt to other positions?
Yeah, I think Jesus actually confused himself a little bit because he came out and told us, I can't remember how long ago it was, but he'd said, I see myself as a winger now. And he'd also almost talked himself out of being a striker. And I don't know whether that was sort of a lack of confidence in himself. And he's really, I mean, Paul will tell you the same thing. He's really, really self-critical. I remember one mix zone we'd done with him a few years, it must have been like 2018 time. And he was missing chances. And he actually said to us, I want to shoot myself in the head. Because he was so upset with his form and how he wasn't scoring goals. and he realised he was, well, he was acutely aware that all eyes were sort of on his record. I think he only got over 10 Premier League goals in two of his seasons, and it sort of weighs heavy on him, which I think is probably the most interesting thing about his move to Arsenal, because as you said, he's sort of played second fiddle at City, played wide, done his job for the team. Whereas Arsenal, he's the protagonist through the middle now. And it will be very interesting to see how he copes with that.
You talk there about his confidence and things, Paul. Would it have been a massive knock to that confidence as soon as he knows Erling Haaland's coming through the door? Do you think that's when he knows his time's up almost at City?
I think, yeah, the writing was on the wall. You know, you don't sign him Erling Haaland to put him on the bench, do you? And I think it came... I think there always comes a point, doesn't it, in a player's career where you think, right, yeah, I need a move now. And it was the same with Sterling this summer. And I think he was ready to move, wasn't he? The competition was hotting up for the Brazil team. He'd been left out of a couple of squads. So he needed to play regularly. City knew that. That he wanted that himself. He told him quite early on in the year. So he had to go. And I think it's one of those very few transfers that benefits everyone, doesn't it? It benefits Man City because they get 45 million or 50 million, whatever it was. The player benefits because he's playing regularly and getting his confidence back. And Arsenal get a striker who's, you know, he does have the potential to score 20 goals in the Premier League this season. And as Jack said, I think his best return was 13 or 14 in 1 year in the Premier League. But he's definitely got that in his locker. He's very much a confidence player. And as Jack said earlier, he really does like beat himself up when he doesn't take his chances. You'll see him after the match. He's really emotionally involved in it. And, you know, if he goes for two or three games without a goal, he'll get quite down on himself. But alternatively, if he starts scoring in consecutive matches, you'll see a completely different player.
You mentioned there about it being good for everyone. Is that kind of a testament to the way he applied himself at Man City, in the sense that Pep's given him his blessing to leave for another Premier League club, of course? Is that something that's almost like a reward for what he's given to the club?
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of... There's a lot of mutual respect there between Pep and Gabriel because he gave him everything that he wanted in a striker, except that, 20 goals a season. You look back at what he achieved and some of the goals he scored. That goal that brought them the 100 points at the end of last end of Pep's second season at Southampton. You know, that Pep, the celebrations that day, I've never seen him so animated. And, you know, they'd already won the league about two or three months earlier. So he was they really wanted that 100 points, and he brought it to them with that goal in injury time. So he's quite a, even though it's strange because he wasn't a regular starter throughout his time at City, but he's still like an iconic player in the Guardiola era.
Jack, do you think what was the fan reaction largely to an exit of a player held in such esteem to another Premier League club, to a rival almost? Maybe not for titles, but divisional at least.
I think there was an acceptance, as Paul sort of alluded to before, I think there was an acceptance that maybe it had run its course, and that everybody felt it was probably the right time to go. Certainly, one or two of the wingers were always going to leave in the summer. He'll always be held in high esteem by the supporters. I mean, some of his best performances have come in the Champions League. There's probably his best ever game was Real Madrid away when he played as a left midfielder, not even a winger. And he was fantastic. So he's given them loads of memories, that Southampton game included. And to be honest, I don't think City fans, unless City were selling a player to Liverpool or United, I'm not sure they're that fussed about any of their players going to Premier League rivals. I think actually they see it as a bit of a badge of honour that City feel as if they can give the players away to teams that historically would be challenging for titles alongside them.
You mentioned Champions League there, Jack, and obviously Jesus has given up, for at least for the time being, playing in the Champions League. He's given up arguably challenging for Premier League titles. Does that indicate how much of a sway Mikel Arteta would have had in dragging him to the Emirates, do you think?
I think so, and I think the same can be said for Zinchenko as well. Everything you hear about Arteta's time at City as Guardiola's number two was that the players loved him, and he did. Certainly with Raheem Sterling, he did a lot on his finishing, and it would have been the same with Jesus. And I think the good thing about Arteta, particularly when he was at City, is age-wise, he wasn't that far away from the players. He knew how to talk to players because he only retired a few years ago. He knows what makes modern footballers tick in a way that maybe some of the managers that are, you know, in the 50s don't. And it's difficult, isn't it, for managers to keep themselves in tune with what squads want. And I spoke to Julian Nagelsmann a couple of years ago about it, and he said being young is such a benefit to him because he knows how to communicate properly. And Arteta's got that. And it really isn't a surprise that these guys want to go and play for him. But I wonder what Jesus will be like in 12 months if there isn't Champions League football, because someone of his ability won't want to be out of that competition for too long.
Paul, almost building on that, what do you see as that first season for Jesus at Arsenal? Do you have any concerns, whether it's the reliance on him for goals, whether it's, is he fit enough, is he injury prone, you know, can he play twice a week for the rest of the season? Are there concerns there, do you think, for some Arsenal fans? And Arteta, I suppose.
Yes, he has had a few injuries, but, you know, when he is fully fit, he's got, you know, such an engine on him that he'll easily play two matches a week for Arsenal. I guess if I was Arteta, I wouldn't be playing him in the Europa League. I'd be, you know, if you want to get the best out of him, he can do it, but it depends where the Europa League lies and the priorities, I guess. But as Jack said, I think he does want to be playing in the Champions League, and already you see him being linked with Real Madrid. You know, they're on the lookout for a successor to Benzema. You know, he's not at that level yet, is he? But, you know, if he has I think he's certainly a player that they would look at in the future. But I just think for himself that he's got that goal of getting in the Brazil team for the World Cup. They've got so many options up front, haven't they? That he's got to be playing regularly, he's got to be scoring regularly. So to him, I guess it probably won't matter which competition he's playing in. Just as long as he's scoring goals and catching the eye of Tite, I think that'll be his main concern at the moment.
And just finally, Jack, Arteta's already put Jesus into this leadership group, the fabled leadership group there for Arsenal. So he's already worn the armband. Is that something that you saw at City? Is that something he'd have developed with the players he played under at City? Or does that come as a surprise to someone who's covered him at City for so long?
Major, major surprise. But then I think that sort of feeds into what we were saying before about players from a club like City that have got so many quality players in the squad, and leadership comes into that. And you're right, he will have picked up things from certain players. I don't know, like a De Bruyne or maybe a Ruben Diaz company going back. But I think that the leadership group element is probably partly him coming as a player that's probably above the standard that Arsenal have had over the last few years. So he's coming in as a big player and a big character, which is sort of, yeah, a bit of an alien concept, really, to anyone that's come to City over the last couple of years.
Did you share that view, Paul? Did it surprise you when you saw him wearing an armband in the Premier League?
Yeah, I didn't know that he was part of the leadership group. I think that is, it's a surprise because he's quite a shy, quiet guy from our dealings with him. But as Jack said, you know, he's the main man, isn't he? He's wearing the number 9. He's leading that attack. So I guess that's part of his development as a player, isn't he? He's got to learn to deal with that responsibility, and you know that'll probably give him confidence as well. We spoke earlier about how he's a confidence player. That'll give him a bit of a boost that Arteta trusts him and thinks he can lead by example and then have a kind of a sort of senior role within the team.
Tim takes up the tale again now, and having touched on Jesus' international career, he delves further into the trials and tribulations the forward has endured with Brazil.
Gol do Brasil! Gabriel Jesus, alô mamãe! Gabriel Jesus faz o segundo do Brasil!
Tim, in terms of Jesus' international career aspirations, how did it all begin for him with the Brazilian national team?
He's a versatile striker. And when in Olympic gold medal team, he's attacking from a wide position. New coach takes over Brazil. Brazil have a long-running problem at centre-forward. Bizarre to think of, but they do. And a third of qualification has taken place, and Brazil are sixth. They are outside the qualification places. There is a real panic that they might not make it. And the first game under the new coach is away to Ecuador, who are joint top, might be second on goal difference, at the altitude of Quito. It's a really, really tough game. And the coach picks Gabriel Jesus at centre forward. Now, that was really throwing him into to the deep end there, centre forward. And I remember thinking at the time, this is insanity. You know, he's not ready for this. 65, 70 minutes into the game, I'm thinking, what on earth is he still doing on the field? Because the only thing he's done is run offside. It's all he's done. Last 20, 25 minutes, he wins the game. First, his pace just arriving, intercepting a back pass, he wins a penalty. And then he scores two absolutely fantastic goals in totally contrasting styles. One is a close range, beautiful volley, really difficult. The other is from outside the area, turning, receiving and putting it into the top corner. So he is the absolute hero. First thing he does, phone his mum. What does his mum say? What on earth are you doing spending the whole game offside? Now, that tells you loads about Gabriel Jesus, just that story about who he is, what kind of person that he is.
His development through the ranks of Palmeiras, you know, the move to Man City, Brazil was going well. But then there's the inevitable bump in the road, isn't there, Tim?
And the whole career spins on the World Cup 2018. Now, I said this when he was bought, when Arsenal were negotiating with him. I got a huge amount of volley of abuse from Arsenal fans. Some of whom have come back to me and apologised, which shows some class, because Gabriel Jesus himself said this in an interview a couple of weeks ago, that the failure in the 2018 World Cup was a trauma for him. And it's huge. I mean, I honestly don't think, from engaging with people on social media, I don't think that Premier League fans have any idea of the importance of the World Cup to someone like Gabriel Jesus. You know, it's the dreams of children. 2014, when he's not known, he's a youth player at Palmeiras. He's one of the millions out on the streets, decorating the streets. It's what they do for every World Cup. They decorate the streets. They'll do murals of the players and they'll put up bunting. You know, it's like a carnival. It's like a jubilee. It's fabulous, actually. I love it. And then 4 years later, he's the centre forward. And he has a mare. He doesn't score in an attractive attacking side. He doesn't score a single goal. You know, the much maligned Serginho scored goals in 82. The much maligned Fred scored goals in 2014. He doesn't get a single goal. And he gets a little bit scapegoated. You know, the coach says, should have swapped that position earlier. Leaves him out of the first squad after the World Cup. Brings him back in afterwards. But, you know, that's a huge trauma for him. And after that, as he said, this isn't me saying, all of those people who attack me on social media, this is him saying he really wasn't sure about being a number nine anymore. Wasn't sure, you know. I mean, Brazil's coach told me that. He said, where do you want to play? And the first response was, anyway, I don't mind. And the coach said, look, a bit frustrated. Obviously, you have a preference. What do you want? All right, I'll go wide then. And again, he confirmed this. This isn't me saying it. This is him saying it. It's a huge trauma for him. And so you get there to the question of what is he? There are two problems, I think, with him as a number nine. One is the lack of confidence. He ran out of confidence in that position. We have seen the work that Arteta obviously knows him from City, and especially how he started at City. Edu knows him from Brazil. We have seen the fruits of the work that they have done to fill him with confidence, to make him important, and to make him believe again that he can play that position. He's flying. The doubt that remains, which will be resolved over the next few months, is in the real physical battle, can he do it in the penalty area? So this, I think, is the question that he still needs to answer about whether he's going to be a world-class number nine. But he's a fantastic striker with so many assets. And honestly, it's wonderful to see him looking like the player that we thought we were going to get in 2017.
I think I saw you tweet, I think it was during the Bournemouth game a few weeks ago for Arsenal, and you tweeted about how it's all about confidence, because I believe for the national team, his goal scoring record of late has been quite poor, hasn't it?
Well, it's not poor, just downright terrible. No. And he's been, and Brazil, with the exception of the final of the Copa America middle of last year, it's win, 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 win. You know, they just blazed away through qualification. It was, they were never under pressure at any stage. And his last competitive goal is more than 3 years ago. It's in the final of the Copa America at home when they beat Peru in the final in 2019. And after that, all through World Cup qualification, and he played 19 games without scoring a goal. That's a lot of games. And most of them he was starting. By the end, they'd lost patience with him, and he was off the bench. Now in June, coming off the bench in stoppage time of a friendly against South Korea that was already won, it was 4-1 at the time, he scored a terrific goal. So, you know, after 19 games, he's finally scored, you know, but not a goal that's of any importance in the context of the match, but a goal I'm sure, and you could see from his reaction, was massively important to him. But it's just that statistic alone, I think, tells you the importance of confidence to this player.
And we're talking Gabriel, so it would be remiss not to ask you quickly about Magalhães and Martinelli. How are they deemed in Brazil, and will they go to the World Cup?
Gabriel Magalhães, I think, will, as the fourth centre-back. They've got loads and loads of quality centre-backs. The first three pick themselves, you know, Marquinhos, Thiago Silva, Eder Militão. Gabriel Magalhães, I think, is in the lead to be fourth. And I did ask the coach last year, said, have you ever thought about playing him first choice? For just because he gives you the left foot. And it's obvious at Arsenal how he's respected as a leader on the field as well. And the coach said, I've got to be honest with you, I've never thought about that. So you know, at the moment he is the best he can hope for is fourth centre-back. And he's a player who wasn't really known in Brazil. You know, he played for a regional side and moved abroad very, very young. So the Brazilian public have got to know him through Arsenal, you know, if they follow the Premier League, and especially if they follow Arsenal. But I think he'll be in the squad as a fourth centre-back. Gabriel Martinelli, I think, has more of a problem, which is not about him. It's about the number of attacking options that Brazil have. And he's done remarkably well. And he went very young. It's what he wanted to do. It's why he went to Ituano in Brazil, which was a club that Juninho used to run, because of the tie-in with English football. So that he was saying there, by going to Ituano, he was saying, I want to go to England. But, you know, it was a flyer that Edu took. He hadn't got anywhere near Brazil's first division. So, you know, Arsenal have made him. And, you know, he's been in the squad. So he's there or thereabouts. And the fact that the squads have been increased to 26 does work a little bit in his favour, because the coach will use all of those extra places to take more attacking options. Martinelli's problem now is that there are so many attacking options that he might just miss out. Last week I was trying to predict the Brazil squad. And as it stands, because when Gabriel Jesus was worried, that's why he moved. You know, because if you go 19 games without scoring, your place in the team doesn't exist. Your place in the squad is under threat. That's why he moved. And with Gabriel Jesus now, he's in the squad, I think. You know, unless something goes badly wrong, he's in the squad. But that's a problem for Martinelli, because, you know, someone is going to have to miss out. And at the moment, I think it's probably going to be him, just because where he is, you know, strikers from wide, they've just got so many options. They've got fewer options through the middle. So I think extra place is likely to go to a striker through the middle rather than Martinelli. But his progress has been extraordinary. You know, he'll have plenty of chances in the future.
Summer 2022. And Arsenal land their main transfer target in the shape of Gabriel Jesus. Here, Arsenal beat regulars Sam and Art discuss the impact of the move, both on and off the pitch, what will change tactically for Arsenal, and how many goals Jesus can score in his debut campaign at the Emirates Stadium.
It's Gabriel Jesus on the follow-up. But the Brazilian comes to life in the penalty area and is able to give Arsenal a deserved lead.
So, Sam, if we start with the Arsenal signing of Jesus, and not in terms of on the pitch, but just in terms of the name, the marquee-ness, which isn't a word, but if you like it, you can have it, of him and Arsenal being able to get him through the door despite a lack of Champions League football and realistically not challenging for the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, it was a major coup for Arsenal to get him, given there are other clubs interested. Absolutely, we know that for sure. Spurs being one of them, and obviously Spurs had Champions League football to offer as well. I think one of the main reasons they did manage to get him was so much of the groundwork had been done quite early by Edu and by Mikel Arteta, who obviously both had relationships with Jesus predating their time at Arsenal. So that made a big difference. And also from Arsenal's point of view, they knew that with Aubameyang gone in January and Lacazette having left the club this summer, the central striker signing was the most important one. They had to get that right. And Jesus, given his relationship with Edu and Arteta, given how well they knew him and given his profile and obvious quality, was the lowest risk option in terms of you could slot him into that team and be pretty confident quite early on that he would fit in. And that's very much proven to be the case so far this season.
Oh, we'll come on to talk about tactically how Jesus can change his Arsenal team. But just since Arteta's come in, when we look at the strikers he's had available to him, especially as Sam touched on there, Lacazette and Aubameyang, Jesus' completely different profile, really, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first striker Arteta's actually bought since he's taken charge, and it's been, I guess, 2.5 years. People had to wait for that first striker for him to almost put the rubber stamp on and say, this is who I want. So I think there was always kind of a question mark about what is the profile of a Mikel Arteta striker. And I think in the 2 years or 2.5 years that he didn't buy one, it always seemed to be kind of a blend or a mix of Lacazette and Aubameyang. It seemed that he wanted someone who could do the job Lacazette does in terms of link in play and drop in a bit deeper, but also someone who could actually get into the box like Aubameyang. And those two never really met the other, if we can put it like that. And I think with Jesus, you just see someone who's able to do pretty much everything Arteta wants from a striker. When you look at, yes, he can drop deep and link play, but he can also travel with the ball. I think that's one major key to his play, and then also he can get in the box, he can press well, and I think you're just seeing a really well-rounded forward, let alone centre forward, because he's someone who doesn't just stick to one area of the pitch. So I think yeah, it was quite a big question mark in terms of what does a Mikel Arteta centre forward look like. But I think you kind of see the prototype, I guess, is there with what Jesus is.
I think for me, that little salvo against Bournemouth, you know, he wasn't even involved. He didn't get a goal or an assist, but it was the Odegaard opening goal, wasn't it, where he took that ball down and beat a couple of men, really showed more than just they've not just signed this goal scorer, they signed this man who's going to be committed to the whole team. Sam, I want to talk to you about off-field at the moment. Arsenal are a club, we know, as the media, fans probably not as aware, that they've been a closed shop for a few years in terms of player access and letting their players talk to the media. But Gabriel Jesus did plenty on the tour. He spoke to him since then. He seems happy to get involved in that side as well, doesn't he? Which is important, I think, for fans as well as journalists, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's also a reflection, I think, of his maturity and his status at Arsenal. When you think back to when he joined Man City, he didn't speak English. He was 19 years old and effectively was this new kid on the block who was trying to find his feet. By comparison, he's turned up at Arsenal and he's already one of the leaders of the team. I mean, the fact that Mikel Arteta's made him part of the three-man leadership group with Martin Odegaard and Granit Xhaka is indication in itself of how quickly he's adapted. And he talked to people around the club and behind the scenes, he's been an absolute sort of inspirational figure already for some of the young Brazilian players and Marquinhos, for example, and Gabriel Martinelli. And his sort of off-field influence is perhaps even more impressive than his on-field influence, because we all knew he's a very good player and that much was obvious from his time at City. But the fact that he's come in so quickly at Arsenal and instantly embraced that role of seniority that Arteta and Edu clearly wanted him to take is a very encouraging sign. And there was a comment he made on the pre-season tour when they played Everton in a friendly, and he had a weird sort of scrap with Yerry Mina during the game in America. And afterwards, he was asked about it in the sort of mix zone. And one of the things he said was, "I wasn't going to back down because I'm not a kid anymore. I'm no longer a kid." And I think that comment kind of sums up the whole thing, that he's a man now, he's a father, he's 25 years old, he's a big earner at Arsenal. He's a genuine leader of this team, and I think he's embracing that position.
Oh, we'll go on to the tactical side of it all now. I'm sure it's something you've looked into already. How does Gabriel Jesus change Arteta's options up top and how he brings other players in and things like that?
I wouldn't want to be undermining Arsenal's former strikers, but I personally I feel he's completely transformed how they play in the final third. I think especially if you compare it to how they were last season, where most of their goals were coming from midfielders or wingers, now they have a genuine threat at centre forward, whereas last year, I think with Lacazette, there were times where you'd get a good half an hour out of him and then for the rest of the game, he'd just be stuck inside of Arsenal's half or around the halfway line. And I think what has kind of struck me most in this probably first few months of him being at Arsenal is how strong he is. That's probably been the most surprising thing to me, because you look at someone who's 5'9" up top and you think, okay, how are they going to deal with the physicality up top? And I feel like not even in one game has he looked like the weaker person when he's gone for Jules. Obviously there was the moment against Leicester where Ramsdale picked him out with a long pass and he spins. Well, first he pinned Johnny Evans and then he spun him. and then at Old Trafford, I think he played really well against both Varane and Lisandro Martinez. I think it was more noticeable against Varane because he was willing to actually go into those kind of physical duels, encounters, whatever you want to call them. And he came out on top in most of those. And then, of course, like you mentioned earlier, Mark, the Odegaard goal against Bournemouth, the touch and the strength, and then the awareness as well. And I think what really kind of helps him and other players around him is his willingness to go into wider areas as well. He's not just going to stay in the middle of the pitch, but he can go out to the left and rotate kind of positions with Martinelli, for instance. I think it just lets Arsenal be much more fluid than they were last season, and it just gives opposition players a lot more problems to solve than just having someone they know where they're going to be. So even, I think it was the Crystal Palace game last year where Patrick Vieira said they knew they could kind of target Lacazette, man mark him out of the game. I don't think that will happen as often now with Jesus up front. And I think that's probably why Arsenal looks so different, even though it's only been four or five months since that game away at Palace. So yeah, a lot of upsides to him being in the side tactically, I think.
Oh, you mentioned his sort of physicality and the way he challenges defenders. One thing I've been really struck by is every time a ball kind of bounces in the opposition half and you think it's a 50-50 or even a sort of 70-30 in the defender's favour, he's got this knack for getting underneath it and getting his body in the way. But I think that's to do with timing and sort of obviously coordination and speed to get there. But he's done that so many times already where like this long ball, aimless like clearance, and he suddenly turned it into a chance for Arsenal just by sheer kind of dogged willingness to fight and to win it over. And that's something that obviously Aubameyang has never really had as a player. And like I said, didn't have the mobility to do. I think that changes things a lot for Arsenal because it just relieves so much pressure as well as obviously starting attacks too.
Yeah, I think he uses his body really well because I think... I don't want to... if he drops his hips quite well and he just... He's able to be quite sturdy. And when he is there, I think he just gives Arsenal quite a good platform to play off. And then, like you say, he's got the mobility to control the ball and then stay on the move and provide for others as well. So I think that side of his game is probably, yeah, what most surprised me. And you're shocked by it every time it happens. I think the reason it stuck out so much with Varane is because Varane's almost basically a man mountain and he was still able to look fairly comfortable. Like you said, it could have been 70-30 in Varane's favour and he still looked like he deserved to be in that battle, which is quite strange on the eye. And also I would say that he does go for those when he's pressing as well. Sometimes it seems like a defender's in control, in total control, and he'll just have like this little burst of acceleration and steal the ball off them and then Arsenal in on an attack again. And that again is another, I think we've always seen that Arteta's wanted his forwards to press, but there hasn't always been that consistency for them to do that over long periods of time. Whereas with Jesus, I think you're seeing chances crop up through that a lot more. And obviously it helps that he's being supported by Ødegaard, Martinelli, and Saka, and even Xhaka at times too. But I think it all kind of builds into this melting pot where I guess whoever's at the top of the side is going to be doing a lot of the work. And it seems like he's happy to be doing all that work and he's doing it well.
I look forward to the anatomy of a footballer piece on Sam later. These are when we talk about Jesus' hips. Sam, we could let art run and run here, I think, talking about Jesus, and it's all interesting stuff. I'm going to go a bit old school here. Doesn't it matter how many times he ends up putting the ball in the back of the net more than anything?
Not necessarily. Not if his presence leads to goals from more teammates. I mean, to be fair to Lacazette, he got a lot of assists last year, certainly on that run around Christmas time. He was Arsenal's main creative outlet and Arsenal played very well at that time. But you would expect Jesus to, you know, hit 15 goals probably minimum this season if he stays fit, given his obvious quality and given the players he has around him. But I think, and Art mentioned this earlier, but you can already see the impact that Jesus is having on Martinelli, for example, who started the season very well, looks very decisive in the final third. So I wouldn't say it's all about the goals for Jesus because he brings so much more. But I think that is the one maybe question mark against him still, the finishing. I don't think he's ever been deadly in the way that you'd expect a £45 million striker to be. His qualities are almost all in the build-up, in the pressing and defensive work as much as they are actually putting the ball in the net. So that is something which I think might become an area of pressure perhaps this season, or fans would start looking at him saying, you've got to convert some more of these chances you're getting. And that has been a theme of Arsenal's season so far, that they've not been converting the chances they've had and turning their dominance over teams into more significant wins, even though obviously they've won so many games to start the season, but they could have won those by a lot more goals on each occasion, pretty much. So that will come down to him to a degree, but I don't think Arteta will be overly concerned if Jesus finishes the season with sort of 10 to 15 goals rather than 25, because I think he'd be pretty confident that Jesus' presence alone and his creative work would lead to a lot of goals for other members of the attack.
It's just, it's an unknown in a sense, I suppose, isn't it? Because he's going to have, you'd imagine, a long old run of games playing as a centre forward, which he never had at Manchester City, you know, apart from when he very first came in and then he got injured. So I suppose he could end up getting 25. You know, we just don't know. I'm looking at the figures. His best Premier League season was 14 goals, 34 appearances. But how many of those are off the bench? He was never the main man at City. So, from what you've seen so far, do you think he relishes that challenge of being the man, being the number nine in an Arsenal team, both on the back of his shirt, but also with those responsibilities on his shoulders as well?
I think so, but I think it's also quite important to say he's actually got decent enough backup as well. I think in Eddie Nketiah's cameos, he's shown that he can probably not replicate to like exactly what Jesus is doing, but he still can have an impact on games when he comes on. So that's why I feel quite similar to what Sam said. I don't feel the onus is solely on Jesus. And I think that would suit him as well, because he is obviously Arsenal's main striker, number nine, but I don't really see it being a pressure. So far, it seemed like a responsibility that he's taken and taken well, but it doesn't look like it's almost bearing down on him like this burden, like it has done with other players who have been tasked with almost having to take Arsenal as far as possible. So I think rather than it working that way, I think he would be someone who does relish, I guess, the challenge, you could call it. But I don't think he is the be all and end all of it, just because he does have decent support around him as well. So yeah.
Right, to put you both on the, we'll finish here and put you both on the spot a little bit. I'll jump in as well. Just a number. We'll go Premier League. If he stays fit all season, probably going to play well in advance of 30 Premier League games. Sam, how many goals will he score this season in the Premier League? He's got 3 already, of course.
14.
I'm going to go with 16.
Ooh, I won't go 15 because that's quite boring, isn't it? I'll say, I'm going to go 12. I think you're both right. I think from looking on the outside in, if you didn't watch Arsenal every week and you saw they spent £45 million on a striker, you'd go, well, if he doesn't get 25 goals this season, it's a disaster, especially when Haaland's his replacement and he's got 25 goals already, pretty much. I think. He just brings so much more to that team. He's such a different player. Suits Arteta's style, as Art says, brings in all those other players. It wouldn't be a disaster, I don't think. Let's be honest, if he gets 12 goals, if he gets 8 Premier League goals this season and Arsenal finish in the top 4, the signing's been worthwhile, hasn't it, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you asked Premier League goals, but I do think he could easily get 20-plus all competitions, because I think you know, given Arteta's history with the Europa League, he generally has played quite strong teams. And I think Jesus will get quite a few minutes on Thursday nights against lesser opposition. And I think I can very much imagine him plundering some goals in Europe.
We shall see who gets the closest with their guess on Jesus' goal tally this season. But for now, that's all we have time for. My thanks to Tim, Paul, Jack, Sam and Art for taking time out to contribute. And also a special obligado to Max Jones. Regular service will return on the Arsenal Beat after the international break. Please remember to rate and review the Arsenal Beat and subscribe so as not to miss out on regular shows and future specials. Stay safe.